Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the 30-Minute Cocktail Hour with Randy Gordon, only on LA Talk Radio.
The stats, math figures, poll results, and or other facts may be incorrect, as the host may be too buzzed or drunk to intelligently refer to them.
Welcome, everybody, once again to the 30-Minute Cocktail Hour. I'm your host, Randy Gordon, and I'm already trying to survive my first drink. Ooh, lordy. Okay, so I decided to stop by the store, and as if you listen to the show, I review some cocktails, different types of cocktails, and or beers, or whiskeys, or whatever it is, whatever the case may be. So I stopped by the local liquor store. See, I can't even talk already. Got a little airplane bottle in me already. Because if you're doing this show, here's the problem with it. I'm doing an hour every week, and the problem is that I don't want to keep buying 750s, or liters or whatever. Sometimes you can buy pints, and sometimes you buy the little airplane bottles. It depends on, the manufacturer, what they're making, and that kind of thing. Because, I don't know, maybe I'll have a big party at the end of the year, because Lord knows I'll have a bar by that time buying stuff every week for the show. So I stopped by the liquor store to see what I could try this week. I want to try something different, something I haven't had, because the last couple shows I did a Guinness IPA and I did a Jameson IPA, so we're done with that. We decided to kind of go to the tropics, man. So I got some rum. Now it's Pritchard's is the company. Pritchard's is out of Tennessee, and they're actually better known for their whiskey. They've actually won some awards for their whiskey, which I haven't tried yet, so I guess I'm going to have to go back and try their whiskey. But at the liquor store, they had these little bottles, the little airplane bottles. I said, oh, that's perfect. And they had this series of rums. Now, the first one I've drank so far is Pritchard's Key Lime Rum. And let me tell you something right now, folks. It does not taste either like key lime or rum. If you were a child of the 90s, 80s, and you had a cough, this is probably the stuff your mother gave you, because that's what it tastes like. It tastes like cough syrup. It's pretty syrupy. If there's someone on your list that you hate, say, hey, you want to try a new drink? And just give them this straight up and, say, hey, let's do some shots. And just watch their face. It's like you're going to have that face of a child who does, a lemon or lime, a little child, and they like pucker up and they're like, ah, it's so gross. That it's shitty is the only way to probably describe it, I think, would be shitty. But here's a list of other things that they do make. So Pritchard's, like I said, is a whiskey company, for the most part. So they make a Tennessee whiskey, a single malt, a double barrel bourbon, Lincoln County Lightning, and something called Sweet Lucy Bourbon Liqueur, which I'm assuming is probably like a fireball kind of thing, because, most people are doing that. So their rums, they have a fine rum, crystal rum, and private stock. Now, they have flavored rums, and I've tried the key lime tonight. There's a peach mango. I did not get that one, but I have the cranberry rum. So that's the next one up. Now, this is, you have to have safety first. So I bought the little airplane bottle of the cranberry rum, which I'm going to try right now live on the air for you. It is live, so you want to call in 323-203-0815. If maybe there's something you drank that your friends said, oh, this is great, and it tasted like horse piss, and your reaction to it, maybe you vomit, I don't know. Whatever it is, maybe there's something out there you say, I will never drink this again because it is the worst thing on the face of the planet. Let me know. So I'm going to try. This is Pritchard's cranberry rum. And it says, for those who enjoy something special. And the other one's a taste of the tropics. But if you enjoy something special, like hernia surgery, this is probably for you. Let's try it. Let's see what it is. All right. Straight up. Here we go.
Oh, God. Son of a... Oh, jeez, Louise. Okay, that's just god-awful. That's worse than the key lime. That's... I don't know where they get off with the cranberry part. So I brought a Coca-Cola to mix with it so I can continue with the show. And I think it's actually... there's some sort of chemical reaction going on with the Coca-Cola. I don't know. I don't know what I'm drinking here, but I may die during this course of this podcast. Who knows? Oh, man, I'm telling you, this is rough. All right, let's take another. All right, it's not bad with Coke in it, but you got to put a lot of Coke in there to get rid of that nasty taste. So that's what we're drinking tonight. If you want to look them up, it's Pritchard's. It's P-R-I-C-H-A-R-D. Apostrophe, yes. Pritchard's Distillery out of Tennessee. So feel free. Go out there and get some of their fantastic rums and the whiskey, I hope, is better. I'm assuming it probably is. Because that's what they're known for. So on with the show. Lots of other things to talk about besides the disgusting stuff I just drank. It is March Madness. That is right. March Madness has started. I don't know if anybody was big... NCAA person. I don't have an alma mater. Went to junior college for radio, matter of fact. So I went to a junior college, so I don't really have, you know, the fighting whatever, you know, Irish kind of thing with me or what, you know, I don't have that thing to follow and buy license plates and banners and decorate my car with, you know, whatever school I went to. I don't have a big love for it. Not like the South. You know, those people, man, I'm telling you, especially football. If you're, you know, somebody from Alabama, went to the Alabama or something, those people really love their sports down there. But in basketball, you'll notice there's, that's what I've, one thing I have noticed about the basketball tournament is there's different schools. I mean, there's some schools that cross over between football and basketball, but not a lot. It's kind of, you find that, I think some of these colleges, these universities, have put all of their money into like one or the other because there's not enough money to go around. So they decided, you know, let's do a basketball team because we're better at that. And it's and football's expensive. It's really expensive sport because you got pads and all that kind of stuff. So I can understand why, you know, you buy 10 basketballs and some, you know, tank tops, shorts, and you've got a basketball team. So the Sweet 16 is left, and I also like to call it the time that I can't watch any of my shows on CBS, TNT, or TBS because it's all March Madness. So I'm sort of screwed there if I like a show. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said that to him. I said, well, you know, it's the time where you can't watch anything you like on TNT. He's like, what? And he just got into, what was the show? Some show like Supernatural. I don't know what show it was, but... on TNT, and he's like, oh, man, I just go... And he had to look it up and see if... and they pushed it to, like, 11 o'clock at night. So he was kind of screwed. So out of all these teams that are left, though... You know, here's one of the things about this, and this is why I kind of don't like it, and I don't play it. And I don't do the brackets, and I don't... Because one thing, I don't know any of the top schools, but I bet you that not even knowing these, just by going on the past and the teams that have been there in the past... I can at least come close because Villanova is always up there. Duke is always up there. Syracuse, Kansas, Gonzaga. I mean, it's always the same schools. So it's kind of nice to see somebody like Loyola, Chicago there, you know, Nevada, you know, some different teams going at it. It's nice to have a little, I think this is why people get all upset about teams like the Patriots. And back in the day when America's team, the Cowboys, were just dominating, you get tired of seeing the same teams over and over again. And, you know, this last Super Bowl is kind of nice to see the Philadelphia Eagles win one. But it's kind of the same thing for me and when it comes to the NCAA tournament. So hopefully, you know, one of these teams that you don't hear much about will get up there and win. But that's going to be starting soon, so I hope you got your brackets filled out and you know what the hell you're doing. And you have, you know, one of the teams. I'm trying to Excuse me. I'm trying to survive this Pritchard's cranberry rum. Ooh, wow, man. That is just god-awful. God-awful. So looking back this day, March 20th, also in history, I was just fascinated to see what was going on. I thought maybe there's something to talk about. The year I was born, 1969. Matter of fact, John and Yoko got married in Gibraltar near Spain, as they say in the song. So, and that, it was their wedding and also the final nail in the Beatles' coffin. That's right. That was pretty much the end of it all, as Wacko Yoko. Man, she was a nut job. I don't know if some of you people might be too young to remember her and what she was like at that time, but she was conceptual artist and just a freak. Just a freak. And her and Paul McCartney apparently have made up. So that guy's had some longevity, hasn't he? Paul McCartney? This guy's just been around. I don't think he's ever going away. Well, I think he's vegan, too. Might be vegetarian. I'm not sure. Maybe that's part of his longevity. Maybe he'll be here, outlast us all, be writing songs until 2300, you know? And kids, I don't know what you'd be listening to. You just download it into your head by that time in the year 2300. You don't even need any electronic devices. It's all in your head because we're all robots by that time. The robots have taken over. It is also the first day of spring. And it doesn't feel like it if you're in most parts of the country, I'll tell you that. It does not feel like spring at all here in Los Angeles. We're waiting for the big storm. The news is talking about the big storm coming. And the big storm for the news is rain. And it's mostly concerning for those people in the flooding areas that, you know, had the fire. And if you're going to be driving because of the idiots on the road here in Los Angeles who don't know how to drive when it rains, when it sprinkles. So we're waiting for that. It's the first day of spring, and also the nor'easter to come onto the East Coast. So, I don't know. Maybe is it global warming? Who knows? Maybe it's just a weather pattern that happens every so many hundreds of years. That's the thing about global warming people talk about. It's like, you're a denier. I'm not a denier. I'm not an acceptor or a denier. I don't know. I have no fucking idea. I mean, obviously, the planet changes. It's a living, breathing thing. But we don't know the history of it, because we haven't been studying it that long. We haven't had the mechanisms in place to study our weather over all those, you know, many of millennia to figure out, well, maybe it is rising at this rapid pace, or maybe it's not. Who knows? You never know. But stay warm out there on the East Coast. And the number to call, 323-203-0815, as we continue. So another thing in the news, the Uber self-driving car has finally had an accident, and it was a serious one. This was the death of a pedestrian, which is not good. Not good for Uber at all. They have pulled all of the self-driving autonomous cars off the road, which is probably a good idea. And, you know, I think you may have rolled it out. They just may have rolled it out too fast. I think it's part of the issue is you want to do this self-driving car thing, which is great, but I think you need to do almost a decade of slow, steady implementation of it. You can't just throw it out there, especially at night when somebody's walking down the street. And they said there's somebody in the car, in the self-driving car, because I think in Arizona right now where they're testing them, that was part of their stipulation, was that somebody had to be in the car when they're doing it. I think to avoid these sort of situations, but apparently it didn't work. Either the person wasn't paying attention. I bet you that person was on the phone. Or asleep. If you're, that's your job is to sit there. Come on. We've all seen those security guards when their job is just to sit there and watch. Yeah, they get on their phones. Yeah, they maybe take a little nap, that kind of thing. So maybe that's the case. And, you know, there's arguments on both sides. Some people say that the autonomous car is safer because people aren't on their phones. There's nobody doing that. They're not distracted. It is a computer. And the other argument is, well, it, you know, doesn't have the instincts that a person who's been driving for years has. And I sort of agree a little bit with that. The fact that people driving for decades, I'm not talking about like a 16-year-old or 18-year-old. I'd say somebody who's in their 40s or 50s, who's been driving for a long time, especially someone who's been driving in this area or a metropolitan area, you have you get a sense. You get a sense of what people are doing out there. You can watch somebody in another car, and you can see their head. Even though they're not putting on their turn signal, you see their head looking over their right shoulder. And if they're in the left lane next to you, you know that they're going to be getting over. That's what they're indicating. They're looking. They're checking it, even though they don't put on their signal. So what do you do as a driver? If you're an asshole, you speed up. But if you're, you know, a normal person, you kind of slow down and wait for them because you see that's going to be happening. And then they're creeping over. And you let it go. But autonomous cars don't know that. So if somebody just gets over, you might have another accident. But of course, a lot of these cars are supposed to have all these braking systems on them now too, aren't they? Where they just stop on a dime if somebody walks. That's, we see the commercials where somebody walks in front of the car and the car stops. But apparently that didn't happen this time around. I don't know what the leeway is, the time. Like, how close can somebody be for the car to stop? What's the sensor on it? But it seems to me that the person, if you have somebody driving at night, and this person was walking their bike on the side, or actually in the median. They were in the median walking their bike, and then they went across the street, not in a crosswalk. Well, if I'm driving, and I see that person on my left in the median, and I'm driving, I'm going to be paying attention. I'm going to be paying attention to that person, because I don't know what they're going to be doing. So you have to kind of keep your eye out for it and just wait and see. And then there's also the other element of eye contact. So if I look over at this person walking their bike down the median, I have eye contact with them. They see me. I see them. They know I exist. Now, unless this person has death wish, which maybe they did, I don't know, then they're going to think twice about, you know, crossing the street, jaywalking across the bike across the street because there's a car coming. So those are things that take into account with these self-driving cars. But I think that Uber needs to step it back a notch and excuse me, and kind of just, like I said, ramp it up slowly. Maybe not put it on the streets right away. There are plenty of places where you can put the car, but it's not on the street, and they can do the same thing. They can simulate all that kind of stuff. You can simulate somebody jumping in front. You can simulate all of these things by pushing a mannequin out there. Get the Mythbusters guys. Those guys used to do it all the time. They could do that for you. You can do all of these tests before you put the car on the street. And, you know, the other thing about this Uber cars that people in New York will tell you about these autonomous cars is they don't change lanes. So if it's downtown Manhattan or downtown Los Angeles, wherever the case may be, where you have four lanes across, two in one direction, two in the other direction, this car stays in the right-hand lane unless it has to make a left-hand turn. But it's going to stay in the right-hand lane and go that way, and it's not going to change lanes. So it's not going to go around traffic. If something, so if there's a car double parked in front of it, it's going to stop and not go around it. I don't know if there's a way that it does it, that it goes around it, but that's one of the complaints that I've heard from people who have, who are actually the New York area, who talked about these autonomous cars, how they just kind of stop in the middle of the street because there's a car double parked. And us human beings, being the buttheads that we are, honk the horn, scream at the person, and then go around them. As you should, as a proud American. That's what we do in America, because we know how to drive, so fuck you. That's what we tell people. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I know Google's doing it too. I think Google actually pulled their cars as well. Because this lawsuit, you know, somebody had a good point on TV that this is the kind of lawsuit that can bankrupt a company. You know, if they find out there's some sort of fault, you know, especially the person in the car, I feel bad for that person because they're probably making, they're working for Uber, they're probably making $9 an hour to sit in that car or less than that and just drive around there. Like, oh, what a cushy gig. I get to sit in this autonomous car that drives around town. I don't do anything at $9 an hour, whatever. But the lawsuit could be coming for you too, but they're going to go for deeper pockets. They're going to go for Uber. And so Uber, which has a shit ton of lawyers, because I know out here they've Los Angeles, they drivers tried to sue them. But so we go from that to another tragedy this week, a bridge collapsing in Florida. And it was in the midst of construction. This is what I'm talking about. You know, you're rushing these things out there to be first, or, you know, they did a bid. That's the difference with this. This bridge company has been cited many times, and they've had accidents. But we rush these projects because of the bid. So the school and the city and everybody took these bids from these companies, and this is the lowest bid. And what do you get for the lowest bid? You get what you pay for. And unfortunately, it's a lawsuit now, and there's death on your hands because you wanted to go with the lowest bid, and here comes these guys. And you can't tell me that somebody didn't vet these people a little bit, you know, do a little background research on this company. I have a feeling as the longer this goes, we are going to find out that whoever worked at these companies knew somebody who was somebody's cousin or something, somehow got this multi-million dollar gig. And also we're going to find that there's negligence because they were tightening the support cables. Either that or they said they were doing a stress test. They weren't sure. Either way, you shut down the road in case this happens. You don't do a stress test when there's traffic out there and there's people working. And you don't tighten the cables because Lord knows what's going to happen. So they're big, and they don't have the center support in there yet. It wasn't in. So you're setting this little thing on top, hoping that it's going to be fine and it's going to sit there, span between these two buttresses there. I don't know. Somebody's head's going to roll. And I have a feeling these companies are going to be gone. They're going to be gone. We're going to get lawsuits. We're going to find negligence. And somebody from the university is going to be gone, too, because you're going to find out that they're the ones who knew about this company, or they had a friend or somebody. That's always how it goes. Every time. But they wanted to rush to it. They wanted to get this thing done. They wanted to have it, accomplished. And so they put in this bid for this brand new bridge construction. They do it offsite. They bring it in. They set it up. Boom, bada boom, instant bridge. But it's brand new and they don't know. So I think you would take your time with some of these things. And it's really, that's the problem with the bidding process when it comes to the government. And we found that how many times over the course of, well, my decades on this planet, you will always hear it's somebody's cousin. It's somebody's brother ran this company. Somebody's uncle did the, was owner of the company or something. Always happens. And it comes back to bite him in the ass later on. So we shall see. And all these, so I'm watching, this is what cracks me up too. All these news panel shows, CNN, MSNBC, they're all talking about the bridge. And they're all, you speculate at this point because you don't know. You don't have all the information. You have no idea. Even like with the bomber in Texas, we have no idea what's going on. If it's one person, two people, copycat person, was it race related? Was it a terrorist? We have no earthly idea. But these panel shows on CNN and MSNBC, they all get on these shows. And what I love about them is you'll have the host, and they're all the same. It doesn't matter what cable channel you're watching. CNN's pretty much the worst, though. And it's not a CNN fake news thing. It's more of a CNN. You need to dial back the number of panelists on your 5-minute segment. You have a 5-minute segment talking about something, and you have 8 panelists besides yourself. And it takes 2.5 minutes, maybe 3, to go through and introduce every panelist and give them their props. You know, here's a Tim Johnson. He's a reporter for The Beacon. And joining us also is Mary Elizabeth Jonathan Thomas. And she's over here at The Hill. And blah, blah, blah. So you have all of these people you got to go through. And there's 8 of them. So then by the time you get a question, 2 or 3 people have said 3 words. And that's it. And the segment's over. Like, oh, we wish you had some more time. I'm like, well, how about you just keep it to like 2 people? Or maybe 3 at the most. Even 3 is pressing it in a 5-6 minute segment. Especially when the host talks more than the other people. I've watched these shows where the host just rambles on and on and on for 3 minutes on a question. And then the last 10 seconds is actually the question. Leading up to it is all of their posturing and all this other stuff and sort of leading the question in one direction. And so by the time they get done, there's no time for the other person to talk. So I can't believe that. No, CNN is really the worst. Watch CNN, people. Some of you probably do. CNN or MSNBC. But the most I've seen is on CNN. I think I saw 8. Eight panelists, and they all weren't in the studio, but you have the host on one side of the screen and then you have 4 up top and 4 below, you know, these 8 little panels, and everybody's just sitting there waiting to talk, and sometimes they never get a chance to talk depending on what the subject is and how much the the worst host about talking and talking and talking and saying the same shit over and over again is Sean Hannity. This guy, oh, my God. Sean, yes, we get it. Yes, collusion, whatever. You know, Hillary, Uranium One, la, 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 struck. And he'll say it over and over and over again in the segment and never gets to a question. So his panelists are sitting there twiddling their dicks for 5-6 minutes because he doesn't ask him a question. He just spews all the same shit about the, you know, Benghazi or, like I said, the, you know, collusion, Russian collusion with Hillary and all this kind of stuff. And so, yeah, it just cracks me up when I watch him because nobody's ever said, you know, maybe that's too many panelists. We don't have enough time. Maybe we should just keep it to a limit of like 2. Or somebody say to, you know, the host, ask a question. Don't just sit here and spew your shit out of your mouth. Actually ask a question to the people. Here's the difference, though, is I've noticed that if the host likes what the person is going to say, knows what the person is going to say, because it bolsters their opinion or whatever political topic they're talking about, then they will just do a little short question and let them just talk forever because they're going to say exactly what the host wanted them to say and exactly what the host was hoping to say. But they want it comes from somebody else's mouth. So that's, I have noticed that. That's one of the little tricks of the trade. Especially when it comes to, especially when it comes to Trump and Stormy Daniels. And now there's the new woman, some Playboy model, really hot Playboy model. Yeah, when they start talking about this, and here's my question to all of you people out there who, you know, post shit on Facebook or online about Stormy Daniels and President Trump and what the hell is going on in this affair and yada, yada, yada. My question is, and especially if you're a Democrat, which I am neither Democrat nor Republican, but if you're, especially if you're a Democrat and you're posting all this stuff and how bad it is, look at that. Oh, he's an asshole. Bah. Which one's worse? An affair when he wasn't president a decade and a half ago or an affair when he was president? So which one's worse? A president having an affair with the person actually in the Oval Office, somebody half his age? Or is it worse, had somebody had an affair
half a decade ago, or a decade more, or and a half ago. Which one is it? You know, because you can't, this is, again, this is my, it is, I've used this term over and over again. It is selective outrage. Selective outrage is all over the internet and all over the news. You can't be selectively outraged at, you know, oh, Trump had an affair with his Stormy Daniels, porn star. Oh, it's because she's a porn star? Is that it? I don't know. She's good looking. You know, hey, you know what you're getting. That's what I say. But, you know, they say, oh, look how terrible this is. But when Bill Clinton was having an affair with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different people, and some when he was president, some when he was governor, and you don't say a word, you're not outraged about it, and Me Too, and all that kind of stuff. So where is that coming? Especially the Monica Lewinsky part. Because if you're going to do hashtag Me Too, she can say it. She has every right to say it. You know, some people disagree with me. But Monica Lewinsky has every right to say hashtag Me Too, because she was an intern. She was a young 20-something-year-old girl who's in the office of the President of the United States. It doesn't get any bigger than this. This isn't a movie producer saying, I'm going to make you a movie star. This is the President of the free world saying, hey, I like your blue dress. Can I jizz on it? So, you know, you have to, did she have a lot of something to do with it too? Sure, absolutely. Just like any of those actresses who say, I want the fame and fortune as well. And you know what? If I got to fuck this ugly dude, man, so be it. Okay. Okay. If that's what it takes, if that's what it takes to get me the house in the hills, you know, if I got to do it this one time, it's not that bad. I'm not whoring out. I can get to pick my projects later on, yada, yada, yada. But aren't you part of the problem then? And can you come back and complain later on? That's the other issue too. Can you come back and say, hey, you know, he did this, or he said he could make me a big star if I slept with him, which has been going on since probably the 30s. But getting back to the president. So, you know, here's the man of the free world, the leader of the free world. And here's a 20 impressionable 20 something intern who the president's taking a liking. He's like, hey, you know, I like you. I like the way you look right there. That's a bad Bill Clinton impression, but that's about as good as it gets. And his wife does nothing, you know, which is the same thing with Melania. She hasn't said a word. But again, which one's worse? And how can you have such selective outrage of this? Why is one worse than the other? Because you don't like that person, or you don't believe with their politics? See, that, you know, that's sort of hypocritical. You can't say, well, I don't, what they did was wrong because I don't like them personally and I don't like their politics. You can say it's wrong because it's wrong, period. End of story. But then if somebody brings up former president, it's even JFK with Marilyn Monroe. And there's other presidents too. You know, are they just as culpable, just as bad, just as evil, just as Nazi-ish? I mean, I don't understand. How can you say one is one, one's okay, even though it's, there's some people claiming they were raped and there's other ones that, you know, how is that? I tell you, and between the two, between Clinton and Trump, as far as affairs go, I give this one to Trump, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm going to post this on the blog. I'm going to post pictures of Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, Paula Jones, Monica Lewinsky, Jennifer Flowers. Now, Jennifer Flowers, out of all of them, is probably the best looking one. Not to sound sexist, but it's, you know, we all have personal preferences. Monica Lewinsky's cute, you know, little chubby girl. She's cute. Nothing wrong with her. I like it. Nothing bad. You know, but compared to what Trump was knocking boots with, I gotta tell you, Trump went to the higher caliber. He did. He this is where the businessman part comes in. He's a smart shopper, you know. He saw the merchandise ahead of time, because one was in Playboy and one was a porn star, so he knew what he was working with. He knew what he was getting there, you know. Nothing's gonna come crawling out of the woodwork and scare him, and
You know, he knows what they got underneath, and none of them working with that 70s Bush. And I don't mean George W. Yeah, so that's my biggest complaint with a lot of this stuff. Are the people that will, and I see it, and selective outrage has become very popular in the last year and a half, ever since Trump was elected, I'd say more so than before, where, you know, what he's doing is sometimes, somehow was worse than other presidents when it comes to deportation of immigrants. Barack Obama deported a lot more, but we don't say anything about it. He was the deporter in chief, is what they called him. But all of a sudden, Trump wants to deport illegal immigrants who are criminals, and it's wrong. He is, Nazi is evil. So you can't selectively choose, you know, what's bad and what's good. It's either bad or it's good, it's either bad, it's good, or in between, or there's varying degrees. There's some gray area in there, but it's not so black and white where one is bad. Well, Bill Clinton, we used to make jokes. All the late night people used to make jokes about Bill Clinton's affairs. Jokes. I mean, but good jokes. I mean, jokes like in favor of him. Not he's an asshole jokes. I'm talking about jokes that they were it's not in favor, but they weren't really so against him. Just they were more jokes that weren't aimed at him, more jokes that are aimed at the action itself, like the blowjob or the blue dress or those kind of things. Especially with Monica Lewinsky, or the jokes became Linda Tripp. Remember when John Goodman did Linda Tripp on SNL? And SNL was big on this too, where SNL was doing a thing where it was supposedly Monica and Bill were chatting on the phone like teenagers, and Saddam got on the phone, and they're all chatting. So, you know, they made fun of it in that way as if it was okay. But then you can't come back and say, well, an affair that somebody had when they weren't president 15 years ago or more. And then the other thing that pisses me off, really, it just irritates the shit out of me, is these news stories that are coming out now where there's just one that Stormy Daniels took a lie detector test, right? She took a lie detector test in 2011, okay? 2011. Let that sink in. That's 7 years ago. That's even 4 years before he announced he was running. So why all of the sudden, a year and a half into his presidency, does this come around? It wasn't like it wasn't known. There was a news organization who paid for it. They never ran the story, but they paid for it. So If he's so evil and he's so bad ahead of time, you know what I mean? Like before the election, why didn't you bring it up? It probably would have buried him. Hillary probably would have won. So I don't understand why they didn't bring it up. You know, it was 2011, like right when he announced his candidacy. This is where, if I was a Democratic strategist and I had this in my back pocket, especially after the Billy Bush thing, and I have this in my back pocket, when he becomes the GOP front runner, that's when I pull it out. Because there's not much time left. You know, you pull it out and you throw it out there. And especially on a Friday at the end of the news cycle, because it's the weekend kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, what do you know? That's what everybody's talking about. It's Stormy Daniels. And then she gets more 15 minutes of fame, and her website does better and all that kind of stuff. So it's the timing of a lot of these things that always kind of bugs me. And I know it's politics and that's how you're supposed to play it. There was one thing in particular that really bugged me as I'm getting on this subject of timing of releasing of things. and these are just more recent. That's the only reason I bring these up. There was probably stuff that, you know, people did with Barack. I don't remember, but is the Billy Bush thing when I mentioned that. So the Billy Bush interview was done in 2005. Okay. So 2005, NBC sits on this shit for that long. He becomes the GOP front runner. Here comes Billy Bush right. This is 3 days before. I think it was about three or 4 days before the debate between him and Hillary Clinton with Anderson Cooper. Now, if you watch the debate with Anderson Cooper, so the Billy Bush thing comes out. It's all over the news. What he said, grab him. He was saying, you're so rich, you could just grab a girl by the pussy, and sometimes it wouldn't matter. Which Kobe Bryant and Ben Roethlisberger and other people have shown us, yes, that's pretty true. I mean, if you're a rich, famous athlete, a lot of women just look the other way and let you do what you want to do because they think they're going to get a big payday or they can sue you. Not all women. I'm just saying there are some out there. And these guys are faced with it every day. Every day. You know, I don't even know what that... I'm the farthest from that. I am the farthest from women throwing themselves at me. So I can't even imagine what it's like to be a Kobe Bryant where every time you're on the road, there's just all kinds of 20-year-old women throwing themselves out there. And good-looking women. It's got to make it difficult, I would think. But then if you watch Anderson Cooper in the debate, he frames a question specifically off of the Billy Bush thing, but not more than a few days later. After that, here comes Gloria Allred trampling out women who say that Trump grabbed them or whatever the case may be. But Anderson Cooper set up the question and repeated it several times because he needed Donald Trump to say, no, I have never done that. So the first time around, he didn't say that. When Anderson Cooper asked him, he's like, have you ever sexually assaulted a girl or something like that? Or inappropriate? I can't remember what the exact question was. But Donald Trump didn't answer it right away. He didn't say no. He wasn't definitive. He kind of said no, but he didn't say no definitively. So Anderson Cooper asked again. And then he asked it until he said no specifically so that he could turn around. So they could turn around on like a couple of days later and trample out these women that said this. This is the game of politics, people. This is what people do. This is why I would never get into politics. Because I don't know what skeletons anybody's got in their closet. But, man, I tell you what. You got to be careful because a lot of this shit can come back to haunt you unless you're honest and you're just an honest person and says what they believe in. You never have to save yourself if you're completely honest. You know what they say about the hardest part about lying is remembering your lies. So if you're honest about it, if people ask you, hey, did you ever smoke pot? And you're like, well, I never inhaled. You know, what kind of fucking answer is that? It's come out. I'm waiting for that politician who goes, yeah, I did when I was in my teens. I smoked pot and actually had a medical marijuana card for a while, but I don't smoke it anymore. I don't care for it. That is more honest. That's like, I would rather see that than somebody trying to appease everybody, because I think that was part of the charm, if there was any, of Donald Trump. It was the sort of candor that came out. He didn't sound like a politician. He didn't sound like the other people going, yes, but I would do this differently. And I understand the problems of the, you know, it's the political answers, you know. I'm waiting for somebody just to be honest, man. Just come out and say how you feel. Like, what do you feel about this or that? Or even if you were honest enough. As a politician, I would have more respect for you if you had the balls to come out and say, no, I hate illegal immigrants. You know what I mean? Like, at least you had the balls to say it. I mean, you're sort of an asshole, but at least you have the balls to say what you believe in. You know, you can't please everybody all the time. And that's what, you know,
politics is all about, is trying to please everybody all the time. And Nancy Pelosi found out that doesn't work either when it came to the Dreamers. They all showed up in her office screaming at her. Remember when she was trying to do the press conference and they're all screaming bloody murder at her and you lied and go to hell or whatever they were screaming. And she was shaking. She was so nervous and she was trying to calm them and say, I'm with you. No, I need your vote. I'm with you. You lying sack of crap. So it's just one of those things that just irritates me as the politics keeps going. And hopefully it'll change maybe in a couple of years, maybe when he's out of the White. I don't know. But hopefully we'll all get our senses back. I've noticed some of it's come back to normal. But for the most part, there's still selective outrage. There's still people that kind of have a friend who posted. And I know he's a, you know, progressive liberal, which is fine. Whatever. I mean, I don't have any grudges against anybody. Believe what you want to believe, as long as you don't hurt anybody. I don't care, you know. But he wrote this paragraph after a post. He posted something, and he put a comment, and it was fucking Trump, fucking supporters, fucking. I'm like, you gotta wow. I'm like, yeez, dude, you need to settle down. It was a big paragraph. This is a very upset person about nothing too. The paragraph was about nothing. So I think we all need to relax. That's what the cocktail hour is here for. You relax, enjoy a nice cocktail. You know, don't take life way too serious. Sometimes, and also use our common sense. Shall we all just use our common sense and look through the bullshit of life, especially the stuff on the news? Can we look through the bullshit? Can we read between the lines? We all have that common sense, that little sixth sense filter when we know somebody's bullshitting with us, or we know somebody's trying to pull a fast one over on us, or we know that people put this scheme together to do something. Yeah, we can see it. You can see it coming a mile away, and we know it. But sometimes we let our political views or our social views or whatever it is, religious views, cloud ourselves. And I don't think we should do that. I think we need to just relax a little bit and not let things get so personal inside of you, you know, because tomorrow's a new day and sun's going to come up. Listen, the sun's going to come up, the sun's going to set, and, you know, shit will be different. It could be good, could be bad. It's all your perspective on things, I guess. maybe it's the Pritchard's rum. Let's kick it in right now that I'm getting all philosophical on you. And let me tell you, again, I had the Pritchard's key lime rum and cranberry rum, and they're both crappy. That is why I brought a Coca-Cola with me as well, so that it goes down so much easier. I do not approve of these. I'm going to give you my two cents. I don't recommend either of these Pritchard's. Next week's show should be a lot better. I will have my first guest. We may get into politics. We may not. I don't know. We may talk about, we're going to talk about wine. That's what next week's going to be about. So my friend Abby said she's going to join me. She is a brand new sommelier. She's a sommelier pirate. She's a sommelier. She's brand new. She just passed her test. We're going to talk about what it takes to do that. Apparently, it's about as hard as the bar exam. And we're going to talk wine. So she's going to give me a recommendation to bring in. We'll drink, you know, moderate. I told her, I said, let me have a moderately priced wine, like a red, because I like red. You know, nothing 50 between, I would say, the Yellowtail sort of 650 range to, I don't know, $30. Got something in there that's nice, pretty good. Let me know. I want to try it. We can talk. We're going to talk wine. We're going to talk the process to become a sommelier, exactly what that means to be a sommelier, if she can smell all the, you know, blueberry notes and the oak and the it smells like roasted pine and it smells like a squirrel's taint, you know, I don't know, whatever you can smell in wine when you're smelling it. She's going to tell me all the secrets or how to do it, or tell us all how to do it. And you can call in when we're live next Tuesday with my friend Abby, so check that out. It should be a good time. The Pritchard's has run through me, and so that is the end of this
broadcast, this podcast. And I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, join us at 30mch.com. Download the shows. You can post comments at our 30MCH Facebook page as well. I'm Randy Gordon. This is 30 Minute Cocktail Hour. See ya!